Hey everybody, so before we get started, it is one of those few times a year when Wisconsin Public Radio is asking listeners for support. So if you like the WPR Politics podcast and you'd like to hear more of it, consider tossing a donation our way. You can do that at wpr.org/donate. All right, podcast time. Well, hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hoo-wee. Man, there is a lot of news going on. So much for us to catch up on. I mean, how are you guys staying on top of it?
You know, I'm really relying on the trifecta of notifications in my life to make sure I'm not missing anything. It's the phone notifications, my Twitter notifications, and my good old email notifications. Really, notifications across the board.
Yeah, you know, I've done that too, but then the problem is I get so many notifications during the day that I just lose track of them, you know, and my phone battery dies sometimes too.
Yeah, that's fair. So what do you do?
Oh, I listen to the radio.
Hmm. The radio, huh? What station?
Oh, you know, Wisconsin Public Radio. Your source for news in Wisconsin and the world.
Ooh, good choice. Good choice.
So how about you? What do you do?
Well, it's something a little different. I have been using a fast car.
I'm sorry, a fast car?
Yeah, a fast car of news. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, starting from zero, got nothing to lose. It's time for a roundup of the week's news.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Myself, I got nothing to prove.
So while it seems, you know, pretty self-explanatory to me, just to add a little bit of context, since there's just so much news for us to get to this week, it's really, really important to be fast. And when I was looking for songs on that topic, it hit me that my favorite song about fast things is Tracy Chapman's Fast Car, the lead single from her 1988 self-titled debut album. And I figured, you know, what better vehicle than a fast car to carry us down this long highway of news? And like we said, there is a ton of stuff for us to get to, so in the name of brevity, we're going to bring back our old friend the timer here and set a hard limit on the time we have to talk about each of these news stories. And when that time limit of 4 minutes, I think we decided?
Four minutes.
Seems fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. When 4 minutes is up, Tracy will remind us.
You get a fast car.
Oh, so good. I can't
it's
wait
so
till
much
our
more
time
soothing.
Is up.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the alarm.
The fast car news. It works. It gets you there.
All right. Well, let's hop in.
So where do we want to start?
Oh, you know, some interesting court decisions this week when it comes to elections. So you want to get there?
Yeah. You want to get there?
In your fast car?
That's our destination. That's our first destination.
I'm sold on this car thing, John, okay?
All right. We want to get there. So let's set the timer for 4 minutes and let's do this thing. All right. Ready? Set? Go.
All right. I'm Laurel. I'm your driver for this. So basically what happened was Monday, we got a ruling from federal judge William Conley in an election lawsuit brought by the state and national Democratic parties and a coalition of advocacy groups. They were looking to change some state election laws during the COVID-19 pandemic, trying to extend some deadlines, saying that existing laws are just too difficult during the pandemic and make it too hard for some people to vote. So Judge Conley agreed with them in part on Monday. He granted an extension of the online voter registration deadline. That would move in his ruling from October 14th through the 21st. But the real biggie was he extended the ballot receipt deadline. So the deadline by which clerks in Wisconsin have to get mail-in ballots in their possession. Under his ruling, it would be 6 days after Election Day, November 9th, as long as the ballot was postmarked by Election Day. So a big element of this story, though, was the fact that Republican lawmakers, the Republican legislature, appealed the decision to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. So all of this is really pending what the circuit court says in terms of whether Conley's extensions are going to be allowed to go in place or not.
So theoretically, it could be either election night or election week come November, because the original deadline was that ballots had to be received by, what, 8 p.m. on election night to be counted?
Mm-hmm.
And now there's this extra buffer of 6 days. So theoretically, if the ruling stands, then it could be several days after the election before we know which way Wisconsin, pivotal battleground state, has gone in the presidential contest, right?
Yeah, I mean, it all just kind of depends on what the margins are looking like. We'll know how many absentee ballots are outstanding. We're getting updated numbers on that. So there are a lot of factors at play in terms of, you know, when we're going to know what we're going to know. So we're just going to have to wait and see. But I think it's really important to note that, you know, as it stands right now, people need to have their ballots in by 8 p.m. on Election Day.
Yeah, and one other thing I think that is like a sounds like a minor detail, but potentially noteworthy. Remember, this was what happened in April, where we had Judge Conley, frequent subject of discussion here on the podcast and other sources of news, such as notifications or radio. Judge Conley said the same thing in April. And the difference, though, this time is that Republicans have challenged that extension. You know, in April, they challenged a portion of Judge Conley's ruling involving when ballots get postmarked. And so the Supreme Court of the United States agreed with them on that and said, like, ballots have to be postmarked by Election Day. They did not challenge the extension. This time, they're challenging the extension. And it's going to go to the Supreme Court. I feel pretty confident about that. And it'll ultimately be up to the U.S. Supreme Court to decide whether or not we have like that election week in Wisconsin, because there are efforts going on similar to this all over the country. You know, we are not all alone in the world on this one, because other states are looking at what happened in Wisconsin, how that was treated, and how they're going to treat their November count of the election.
And in April, we know that the extensions led to tens of thousands of people being able to register to vote or submit the ballots. So,
you get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere.
That's good, man.
You know, I love the so song, good. But I did resent it a little bit because I liked that point that I was making.
You can finish your sentence at least. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that the extension in April, you know, led to tens of thousands. I think it's around 70,000 ballots were counted that wouldn't have been counted because of the
it's
extension.
Like 79,000, I think.
There you go. So, okay, close 80,000.
hop in there with a well, actually.
Well, actually.
Oh, you're playing us off.
We'll move on.
Wrap up the speech. Oh, hey, John.
All right.
Hey, John.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing. I think if you want to vote absentee, you should do it early. Don't assume that you can wait until these deadlines, because the post office says
you get a fast car.
The post office says they need 15 days, even though that's by law you have more time. Vote early if you're going to.
All right, don't make me play it again.
We have no respect for rules. Go ahead.
What's the next stop on our news road that we're driving in our fast car of news?
How about another stop on the mask mandate highway?
That's not a real highway.
Not yet, John. Not yet. But can we talk about the mask mandate and the public health extension and the ongoing fight there?
COVID-19? I think
Okay.
I think we should. That story is, once again, a major story here in Wisconsin. So let's get the ignition going on our news car. Setting the just so many bad.
Who turned off the car? We have so many stops. It's just so inefficient.
Well, we're changing drivers all the time. You know,
Who's even driving in this one?
I'm driving again, though, aren't I? We just got out and ran around the car, and I'm driving again.
I'm driving, dude.
You're driving. Scooch.
Yeah. I'm gonna drive.
Fine. I call shotgun though.
All right. I'm starting the timer right now.
Okay, I'm sorry, Laurel, that I just took over the wheel here, but, you know, I was feeling like a backseat driver is just not a good feeling, all right? So I took an initiative. So happened this week is that the governor issued another emergency order. So he's done this a few times this year. He did it back in March at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, using a state law that lets governors declare public health emergencies for up to 60 days. This is different than the set of powers that his Department of Health Services used to declare, the safer at home orders earlier this year that were struck down by the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court has not struck down Governor Tony Evers' power to declare these emergencies. But there was some thought earlier this year that the governor could only declare it once. He declared another one this summer when he issued his first mask mandate, and that one lasted 60 days or was set to last 60 days. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty sued, said, no, you can't do this. You can't keep it declaring new public health emergencies for the same emergency. You got to go through the legislature for this stuff. That court case is still pending. And so now the governor has issued another emergency order and another mask order. And this one runs until November.
And I think it's important to point out that this new order and mask mandate comes in the context of Wisconsin seeing especially high numbers of cases for us, a surge of cases where we're pretty consistently seeing new records of daily cases, a lot of it having to do with college students returning to campuses, K-12 schools reopening in some situations, but also spread in other parts of the community. And the numbers are higher now than when Governor Evers issued his past emergency orders.
They are. And I would also say a number that I was sort of sold on. I don't mean that in a bad way, sold on, but a number that was emphasized earlier this year, the number of hospitalizations in Wisconsin, you know, that's an important metric to look at. And the number of hospitalizations in Wisconsin, as we record this podcast, it hit a record high 3 days in a row. That means we have more people hospitalized for COVID-19 now than we ever did before at one point this year. So it's not just college kids getting it on campus and, you know, they're young and healthy and they can handle this stuff. It is, you're seeing a larger number of people go to the hospital for COVID-19. So it's definitely something that's still with us, although obviously people's attitudes about it have changed as it's been with us for many months now.
So obviously the virus continues to be really serious here in Wisconsin, maybe arguably more than it ever has been up to this point. But just in the minute or so that we have left here, getting back to the political response to it, Republican lawmakers have been really critical of the governor's handling of things, you know, of his extended emergency orders and mask mandates. But all it would take for them to overturn those orders would be a simple majority vote in the legislature. But again, this week, Republican leaders declined to take that vote.
That's right. So there were really strong statements that came out this week from both Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, using some really strong language. I mean, Senator Fitzgerald said that the governor's new emergency and order weren't worth the paper that they were printed on. And they both called the move illegal and, you know, referenced the ongoing lawsuit that Sean has mentioned. So there was definitely a marked response, but there was also a real lack of a statement that they were going to come in and hold these override votes. That's not something that they have expressed, obviously, interest in doing up until now, and it doesn't look like that's going to change.
You get a fast car.
Sorry.
Had it's all right. I was so close, though. It was only like one final, word.
Final thought there?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
All right. What's the next up?
How about Caleb Frostman, the now former Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development, and unanswered calls to the state's unemployment insurance line?
Yeah, works for me. That's news that's sort of been breaking in stages over the last week or so.
Yeah. So who's going to drive this one?
I don't know. You guys kind of co-drive it. One of you works co-drive. The pedals. One of you works the steering wheel.
That sounds safe. Right. It's the car. We have two steering wheels, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like the learn to drive car. Yeah,
I was thinking like the at a carnival, you know, the kids sit next to each other and they both have steering wheels. What could go wrong in an actual car with two steering wheels?
All right. Setting the timer. Ready, set, go.
So the first part of this story was from last Friday, and that's when we found out that the governor had asked for and received the resignation of the Secretary of the State Department of Workforce Development, Caleb Frostman, who had formerly served as a Democratic state senator. The governor said that, or a source close to the governor said that he was motivated by frustration about the ongoing backlog of unemployment insurance claims in Wisconsin. And when the governor put out a prepared statement, he did say that it was unacceptable that some Wisconsinites have been waiting months to get unemployment insurance payments. And that he thought a change in leadership would be necessary to kind of, you know, change the outcome here to get the problem solved.
And then the other part of that story we found out today from this audit, the Legislative Audit Bureau put out a summary of what was going on in the, you know, with the state's management of the unemployment insurance program from March 15th until June 30th. And the Audit Bureau said that 38.3 million of the 41.1 million total telephone calls to call centers were blocked or received busy signals. And so they didn't reach the call centers. 6.2% of calls were abandoned by people before speaking with the call centers. And only 0.5% of calls were answered. So those are pretty striking numbers. You know, you're talking about 93% of calls that were blocked and only 0.5% of calls were answered. And we've heard the governor and lawmakers go back and forth in this quite a bit. Republican lawmakers blaming the governor for mismanagement here, his administration. And the governor saying to Republican lawmakers, you kind of built this system to fail. That changes you made under the Walker administration made it harder to get unemployment, basically. It's designed to be difficult. But those numbers from the Audit Bureau are quite striking. You know, there's no way to slice that. Kind of heartbreaking for those people who could not connect.
Yeah, I mean, we've been hearing for months, you know, anecdotally about how difficult it was for people to get through and get information about their claims. But this is the first time now where we're actually seeing the real numbers, the extent of how bad the issue has been.
And the state is also, you also kind of get an idea of why they're pushing people going online to file. You know, they don't push the phone call very aggressively. They tend to steer people in other directions. And you see these numbers now, it gives you a little bit of an idea as to why.
Well, we actually have a few seconds left.
I think we could all use like a little bit of a nice music interlude, even though we didn't hit the deadline this time. John, can you jump it a little bit here?
Mm-hmm.
Like a car battery? There you go.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere.
Good. Thank you.
All right. What's next?
Well, could we turn to some national politics and, you know, news involving our U.S. senators to start with?
Oh, I suppose we could do that.
Okay.
Starting the ignition again, or whatever my metaphor was.
Something like that. Car metaphor here.
Tires, road,
right.
Fast, news, ready, set, go.
So there was just some enormous news. Obviously, you all know by now, last Friday, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died at age 87 after a battle with pancreatic cancer. Justice Ginsburg was one of the, you know, four liberal justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. Her death means that the president has a chance to nominate someone to replace her, and it's up to the U.S. Senate to decide whether to confirm that nomination. So it's very close to the election, of course, and it's been a heck of a year by pretty much any measure. You know, there's just so much happening, and now this is happening. So I think the question in the hours after that happened was like, well, what's the Senate going to do? Because Laurel, I think you saw this quote from, it was in the NPR story, right? From Justice Ginsburg relayed to NPR about her kind of her dying wish.
Yeah, absolutely. She said that her dying wish was that she would not be replaced until a new president was elected. And this has become a very partisan battle over the past week. You know, Democrats saying that the things that Republicans said in 2016 when Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the court and the delay by the Republican Senate to hold confirmation hearings and a vote for Garland, they're kind of trying to hold Republicans to that standard. Republicans are pushing back and saying, you know, it's a different scenario this time around. And Wisconsin U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is he's exemplary of that argument. You know, he was against holding the votes in 2016. He's come out in favor of it this year, just saying that the political dynamics are different. He said, you know, we've got a Republican is in the White House, Republicans control the Senate, and that's just kind of because of that dynamic, it's just different this year, and that's okay, and we should go forward. So there are a lot of folks that are unhappy with that, though.
Yeah, I think what's striking about Senator Johnson's story is he's sort of stating like a practical political matter. Like, we control things, so we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. If in history, when one party controls things, they do things. But what he said in 2016, you know, the standard that he laid down could not have been more clear, that clearly against having a vote like this. You know, he said, this is from his statement, May 10th, 2016, so months before the election. He said, quote, instead of a lame duck president and Senate nominating and confirming a new president and Senate elected by the people only a few months from now should make that important decision. I can't think of a fairer or more democratic process. So really no wiggle room in his 2016 statement. He is, he's directly violating the standard that he set down in 2016. And I don't think there's even any debate about that. Mm-hmm. But that said, I'm not surprised that a party in power is not going to pass up an opportunity to nominate a justice to the Supreme Court for a lifetime appointment that will give them a 6-3 majority on the court, you know, assuming that it goes through. It's not a done deal because the Senate has to confirm, but as
you get a fast
news spot. Travels fast, man. You know.
Well, I think you managed to cover most of that there.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we have one more stop to get to in our news car, our fast car of news. Where are we going?
I think we're going to talk about, this is something I think we could talk about any week on the podcast for the rest of,
eternity?
I was going to say 2020, I don't know,
probably.
A while, but presidential campaign stops in Wisconsin. We've had more of them more on the docket. And they're important, so we feel like we should mention them. Big deal. Right?
Don't we sound like political junkies, don't we? Like, wow, famous politicians came here. So exciting. But you're sensing this kind of like, oh, it's still happening. In the tone, like, okay, another visit.
They just keep showing up.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were any other year, it would be the main thing on our radar. But there are just, you know, a few other stories going on this year, too.
Start that car, John.
All right, starting, I'm going to call it a trip odometer this time.
Good.
Just to mix it up. Another car thing I thought of.
Good job.
All right, ready, set, go.
Well, we can start with the beginning of the week this week. Seems like a reasonable place to start. Joe Biden, Democratic presidential candidate. Of course, Joe Biden was in Manitowoc on Monday. He was at a manufacturing facility where he gave a speech that focused mostly on how President Trump has responded to the COVID-19 pandemic and just was sharply critical of the president. This week was the week, it feels like it was a while ago now in kind of the time warp of COVID time, but both the country and the state hit some milestones for COVID-19 cases.
Those milestones were 200,000 deaths nationwide and then 100,000 positive cases so far in Wisconsin, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that was something that that Biden talked about and just said essentially that if President Trump had acted differently, the pandemic wouldn't be kind of in the place that it is right now if he'd handled things in a different way.
All right. Well, who else was here this week?
Well, I don't know when Sean wants to like take the wheel on this, but
I'm just
enjoying like, the view, the scenery we drive by. Are you playing
we stopped for a Happy Meal at our last stop, and I'm eating while you drive.
Sean's playing the game like green car, blue car, silver car.
Yeah, I'm looking for license plates.
Picturing him like a dog with his head hanging out the window.
I pictured us in a convertible for this for some reason. It's a happy place for me. I want to talk about this one, Laurel. You covered the Secretary of State, right?
Yeah.
Had a speech at the Wisconsin State Capitol. That tells me we are in unusual times and certainly in this case in election season.
Yeah. I mean, this was unprecedented. According to the Wisconsin Historical Society and the Legislative Reference Bureau, a sitting U.S. Secretary of State has never visited the Wisconsin Capitol. That's what happened on Wednesday when Secretary Mike Pompeo came. He talked to Republican lawmakers in the Senate chamber. He focused on mostly China. He talked about Chinese interference in state and local government and kind of where the Trump administration is working to combat that and what kind of state lawmakers can do to help. He talked about, Chinese influence on the economy, obviously an important subject that we've heard a lot about over the past several years. And he defended the Trump administration and President Trump's tariffs that have led to obvious economic consequences in Wisconsin, essentially saying that, you know, he believes that people understand that kind of the short-term hurt that the trade war there has inflicted on some Wisconsin businesses is worth it in the long run.
Also this week, Mike Pence, who basically just he just drops in all the time now.
I mean, it's kind of like a weekly thing at this point, almost.
Yeah, I know. He has more, he does like more Wisconsin stops than we do podcasts, you know, or like a similar level.
I really am convinced that he's like bunking with former Governor Walker. I think he and Scott Walker are just like, Mike Pence has like a room at the Walker's place and they're just
Here's something we've never talked about. It came out a while ago, but there was that report that Walker was helping Pence do debate prep. I don't know. Was that like debunked? It was not confirmed, I don't believe. But there was talk that Walker was playing Kamala Harris in this case.
And Walker has helped with debate prep in the past for the vice president. So it wouldn't be far outside the realm of possibility.
You get a fast car. It's
good stuff. I'm enjoying this pretense convertible ride through the country.
Guys, have we reached our destination? I feel like that was our last pit stop or like side journey or whatever we want to call it. I'm not sure. Last leg of our trip.
Let's just keep going Thelma and Louise style, you know? They're not going to stop us.
Just right over the cliff.
Spoiler alert. Hello. Come on. It was a lovely movie until that part. Come on.
Well, it has been great driving along in this fast car of news with you guys. And thanks special guest Tracy Chapman for joining us on this road trip. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
So I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights day out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone.
If you, want a feeling that you belong, that you could be someone, then consider subscribing to the WPR Politics Podcast, and you'll get new episodes delivered to you almost every single week. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And while you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And of course, you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politicspodcast.
Driving in your car, speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone.
It's just like the stupidest intro we've done in such a long time. I can't hardly say my name because I'm just like...